Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Five at five in about 10 minutes. G&D on the Fan. Is this also a Star Wars thing?
I think this is the Max Rebo Band.
I don't know what that means.
Is it not?
This is something Brock hooked me up with. Yeah, it is. It is. He might have sabotaged us, though. I didn't know this was what I was playing.
I don't know this. I'm going to be honest with you. It sounds like the Max Rebo Band.
It says Jabba's Palace Band.
Yeah, so it's the Max Rebo Band. It's a deep cut maybe off the extended edition. Not the extended edition, the remasters or whatever you call it. The George Lucas things.
That it's May the 4th.
He is probably dying laughing in his car on the way home.
I got Cy Snoodles on the mic there.
I want to squeeze in a handful of calls on Wilson because people want to talk about this. We will get to the 5 at 5 with all our planned stories and storylines. But let's get to this. We'll give you guys a little time, but if you be succinct, we'll get as many opinions on as possible. We'll try not to say a whole lot in between. Let's go to Keith in Bristow. What do you got?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, dude.
I just wanted to mention that I completely agree with you guys. The punch is completely unnecessary, but then again, it does happen in hockey consistently. Whether it's a cheap shot, just a kind of a swing from the fences while like everybody else is in the scrum, you just kind of blindside hit them. It happens. But it just needs to be out of the game. When somebody comes and jumps on your back, you don't defuse the situation by saying, "No, please, sir, don't do that to me." Like, you take force and you handle it appropriately.
What is the recourse? I mean, like, what else? That's what I don't know. What was Wilson supposed to do as far as the Panarin part of this? Again, I'm separating this like you are, Danny. Well,
yeah.
I don't know that you are, but I'm separating this into two things. The Panarin thing is such a non-story, such a non-suspendable, nothing burger to me with bacon, cheese, and ketchup and mustard. The punch is a different thing.
Right. It's a big deal because it went bad for Panarin. This is always my point. When I always forget the guy's name from Pittsburgh, when they collided with Tom Wilson and he went, was it Reese? Aston Reese? Was it that guy?
Yeah.
It went bad for that guy, so they suspended Tom Wilson. I'm sorry it goes bad when you get in the ring with that bull.
Greg in Remington, you're on the Fan.
Hey, Grant, Danny, thank you so much for taking my call.
You got it, buddy.
You know, I read that article this morning on Twitter from the New York Post, the guy that
Larry
posted
Brooks.
It or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was appalled by it. And let me tell you something, because I'm a diehard Caps fan. And I've been to a lot of Cap Ranger games. It's phenomenal that, well, let me put it this way. Last night, I think the guy was watching Nancy Kerrigan and Tonya Harding do their thing, whatever it was 30 years ago, because he's a big sissy.
I don't really know what any of that meant. I'm going to be honest with you.
There's a figure skating reference there.
I don't know how. I think he, like, did someone take a lead pipe to someone? I don't know. He made a figure skating joke. I like you. I know you. I mean, I don't know you personally, but you're a caller, and that's great. I just don't know what you meant. That's all. Carson and Culpepper, what's going on?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey, Carson.
I'm a big Tom Wilson fan. I think he's a complete player, but he's also an enforcer. I mean, he's not that much different from Malkin for Pittsburgh, but you talk to a Pittsburgh fan and they're like, oh, no, Malkin's a great guy, but that Wilson guy, he's got to go. He's the worst. Like, everybody likes who they have, but for some reason, like Danny was saying, you know, there's a whole nother book of rules for Tom Wilson.
Let's go to Brian in Arlington. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hey, Brad.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Hey, man.
Yeah, I just kind of wanted to follow up on – I didn't realize the guy in front of me was going to say kind of the same thing I was going to say, but, yeah, every team has a player that they love and will defend to the end of the earth, but the rest of the league absolutely hates them.
Brad Marchand.
Exactly, Brad Marchand. I have a friend who's a Bruins fan, and he preaches how he's basically – Connor McDavid on the East Coast. And Marchand is a great player. I mean, the dude's got 27 goals, 26 goals, I think, on the year already. But he does no wrong. And I think Marchand is 10 times worse than what Wilson does.
Same.
When Marchand steps over the line. But how, again, do you think that the second topic I want to bring up was that, do you think player safety kind of flipped the punishment around from when Wilson hit Carlo and he got the big suspension? And this one where you just got a fine, I think, if anything, it should have been the other way around.
100%.
Danny, you said this at the start 100%. Of the show, and I agree with this totally.
This is how I feel. I think the NHL has this backwards. Stuff that happens in the run of play should be there should be a wide breadth given in terms of not cracking down. You want to suspend a guy for a game or two because somebody ends up concussed. I understand that. I'm not naive. This is the real world we live in. But we shouldn't legislate back from results. Extracurricular stuff that has nothing to do with hockey. Punching someone in the face to me has nothing to do with hockey. We should be working that out of our sports. A lot of the other sports have figured it out. The NFL doesn't really allow that. The NBA doesn't allow that. Baseball certainly doesn't allow it. Stop fighting each other. Stop punching each other. Extracurricular things, smacking someone with a stick, the stuff that you always talk about, that's slew footing somebody or licking someone's face or punching somebody, that's the thing I'm suspending. I will crack down on that starting the instant you let me. Let's get the CBA together. Let's get whoever we need to get, player reps, NHL, whoever needs to be involved. Let's get them involved and crack down on that stuff.
Yeah, I've said in the past, and people will say you're doing a tough guy thing or what, you know, and it's just how I feel. All I can do is be as honest with my opinion as possible while I'm sitting here. Doesn't mean everyone's going to like it or needs to like it. I would almost never suspend someone for hitting a player within the parameters of the game. If it was clearly dirty, headhunting, violent, that's a conversation we can have. But if it's anything like Wilson, Carlo, where you're talking about a guy playing hockey who hits someone who gets hurt, targets are moving. It's a very fast game. It's incredibly violent. We talk about this in football. This is football on ice skates.
Yes.
No, this is that game that we say it's impossible for these safeties.
Yeah, always.
It's so hard for these linebackers. Now add ice and skates. It's really,
yeah,
really
it's
difficult.
Dirty in slow motion when the receiver ducks his head down. What was his gut is now his forehead.
But when the whistle blows, and I know it's you're human and there's, you know, you're in the heat of the moment, that's where I would be less forgiving if I was the Department of Player Safety. I would not have suspended Tom Wilson at all for the Carlo hit. I said that. There are other times he's been suspended for a ton of games. I wouldn't have suspended him at all.
I just want consistency, consistent application of the rules.
This time, if it's me, I probably would have given him a game or two. And they gave him a $5,000 fine. They just care about different things than I do, I guess. TJ's in Virginia. What's up, TJ?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, man.
You guys have pretty much hit everything on the nose with this. The thing that's kind of making me upset now is the jokes up in New York that's saying Wilson almost killed Panarin, this, that, and the third, and that he has no hockey conscience. Tom Wilson has 33 points in 43 games played. He is definitely out there and does what he needs to do. I know he's done a lot of questionable stuff in his career, but I think more so the reason he's so hated is because he can damn near do it all. I mean, he's not scoring goals like Ovechkin or Panarin, but he's out there doing everything he can. He gives it his all every night. Was the punch questionable? Absolutely. I, like me personally, in a game against a rival like the Rangers or Pittsburgh or Boston, don't hurt the guy to the point where you end his career or get him out long term, but do what you got to do, man.
I mean, it was a little jab, but it's a defenseless guy in a peculiar spot up against ice. And I just didn't like that when I watched it. I thought, I don't want to see that. Like,
right.
I don't like that. Zach and Calvert. Punch, Panarin, two different things. What'd you think?
Hey, thanks for y'all taking my call. I'll make
it
quick for you. Hey, I personally agree with you guys. The punch is a little bit skeptical, and if you want to suspend him, you know, go ahead. But they didn't. And to complain about the fine, they fined him the max within the rules. They are the rules.
Right.
It is what it is. Now, my second point is there's too many inconsistencies. You go look at the Carlo hit, and if you haven't seen it, I urge you to go back to Matt Martin just a couple games ago against us when he hit Matt Roffel against the board. Literally the same exact hit. Same exact hit. I urge you to go watch it. And he got no penalty, no suspension. And the problem with that is there's no hard lines drawn in the sand. So you're going to have Wilson and others towing these lines. And I'm all for it until that line is clear.
It's a great call. And that's where I'm at. All I want is whatever you set your bar. We'll quibble about what the bar is. That's reasonable. People can have that discussion. Anything that exceeds it, because if you're suspending one guy and not the next guy, then you're doing it based on some other criteria that are more subjective. We should have as clear a process as possible when it comes to this. Not they're just in a room right now, you know, playing tic-tac-toe, and we'll see what comes out of it.
All right, let's squeeze one last call in, and we'll get to the 5 at 5 next here on Grant and Danny. Kevin is in Arlington. You guys want to talk Tom Wilson, no suspension, $5,000 fine. He is still right now trending nationally on Twitter among sports categories, as fans are weighing in all over the East Coast with their disdain. What's up, Kev?
Hey, guys. While I wasn't hold, I looked up NHL Rule 56 on fisticuffs. The refs called it perfectly. What Wilson did, sucker punching, Buknevich, that was Bush League. He got a 2-minute instigator on that. He also got 2 minutes for roughing Panarin. Panarin got 2 minutes for roughing Wilson. What about third man in? Okay, I guess they don't call it anymore. Tom gets a 10-minute misconduct. Tom gets a $5,000 fine. For once, the Department of Player Safety got it perfectly right. It was fair. Let's not forget that Buknevich is kicking at exposed Vanacek, who's in a split, and Tom goes to his rescue. Did he go too far? He did. I hate that he sucker punched him, because guess what? He's got an even bigger bullseye on his back now. But all the other points about, you know, Carlo's hit that wasn't called. Yeah, I can go back to the 2019 playoffs. Fogel's hit on Oshie. Anders Lee hit in the playoffs last year on Backstrom. We never get the calls. Okay? Physics matters. Tom is a big man. When he collides shoulder to shoulder, when he collides face to face with someone, they're going down. So Panarin, memo, buddy. You mess with the bull, you get the horns. For God's sakes, the outrage, the righteous indignation from the New York coach, from the New York players, from the New York media, they can all kiss my fanny. The hell with them.
Appreciate Thank you, buddy. You, buddy. Thank you. Yeah, I think people are struggling because people keep saying, you know, I can't believe you don't think that the hit was a problem. I don't know how to make this more clear. I don't know what to tell you. I am upset and angry that people are pretending like what he did with Artemi Panarin was in any way an issue. Okay? Period. I do think the hit to the back of a defenseless player in the crease was a problem. Now, I'm not going to pretend like things like that don't happen in hockey regularly. You know, for people that just watch the Caps, you may think that Tom Wilson's a crazy person because he punched this guy. That happens a couple times a week in the sport, that exact thing. And it all is, he's in the crease, he's kicking at a goalie, he's trying to ram a puck in, and this is a thing that happens. Having said that, I don't like it. I thought it was a dirty moment. And I would have suspended him a game or two for that. Very clear for me. But the Panarin thing is what gets me. That's what boils the blood. You got some guy jumping on your back. I'm supposed to just say, hey, man, me and this guy are doing something right now. You're just a little guy. I don't want to fight you, okay? So you go over there. Hockey is happening. Grown men are fighting. What do you want him to do?
So the part where I think I depart from you and this is not a Tom Wilson phenomenon. This is a hockey phenomenon to me. That we just sort of accept that this level of fighting and body slamming and extracurriculars, that's hockey. I'd like to change that personally, but that's not a Tom Wilson issue, right? That's my own sort of pet thing that I'd like to address and kind of bring up. I just think philosophically, this is, you've got the wrong set of priorities. I'm all for trying to keep guys safe. That's a pretty reasonable thing to do. Inevitably, something's going to happen. But they're going about it by saying, well, if a guy collides with another guy on the ice during play, it may or may not result in a penalty. We'll look at it after the fact and suspend somebody 2 games, 4 games, 7 games, 20 games. Tom Wilson has received those. But we'll talk about punches and things after the whistle. All we can do is fine you $5,000. Whoopsie doopsie. It's just out of whack, in my opinion. So I would suspend Tom Wilson. I would suspend Tom Wilson probably a game, maybe two, for punching a dude who was defenseless in the head. I don't care if it wasn't the hardest punch in the world. I don't care if it was Ivan Drago measuring his strength in Rocky IV. Please don't punch defenseless people. I think we can just start there as a society. We can even include that in the NHL. I would have suspended him for probably a game or two based on that.
Is it raining outside right now? It is almost pitch black.
It's
what is going on?
It's the Vin Diesel movie outside right now.
I just looked outside, and it looks like it's 11 at night.
Yeah. Thunderstorms are coming, dude.
Nats are supposed to play at 7:05. Hopefully they get through here early enough that they can start on time.
Incredibly handsome weather gentleman, Doug Kammerer, I saw on his Twitter account.
Good looking guy.
Just so handsome. I think he said first pitch might be in jeopardy. They might have to push it back a little bit, but they'll get it in the night.
It might be in the show hosted by Aaron Rodgers. Oh, thank you.
Oh, it caught me. I went, what?
I'm just waiting. I'm waiting on you.
No,
to give me
you dropped the nugget, and I go, well, look at that. Hit the ground. I wasn't there. That's
right,
on me.
Let's do this. There's not really any hard and fast rules that prohibit us from doing what we're about to
do. There are no rules.
First time, we're going to do the 5 at 5 at 525. Doesn't have quite the same ring to it.
Are you sure we can do that?
Come on.
Are you sure we can do that?
Just don't tell our boss.
Just don't tell Seeker.
Don't tell him. All
right, cool.
Don't tell him.
It's going to be called the 5 at 525. On Grant and Dan. Yeah, Tuesday, G&D on the Fan. Radio.com's now Odyssey. Download the Odyssey app. Listen to 106.7 The Fan and all the sports news, music, and podcasts that move you. Make sure you do it at 5 every day so you can hear the 5 at 5. We got hot and heavy talking Tom Wilson on the phones later than normal today. It's still brought to you by Wave Soda, which is awesome. Super simple, bubbly water, splash of real juice, and a little caffeine. Unsweetened. No stevia. No artificial sweeteners. It's got a clean finish. 2 to 6 grams of sugar, 15 to 25 calories per can. Order now at wavesoda.com. You can get 15% off with our promo codes, Grant or Danny. That's Grant or Danny. And in fact, we want you to support Wave Soda, not just because it's a great product and they support us, but I believe the inventor is a Junks listener.
Yes, he's a DC guy.
DC guy, Junks listener, got a company, hit it big. So go support him, wavesoda.com. Number one, 5 at 5, Joe Beninati, the face and the voice of Capitals hockey, on Tom Wilson, the situation he found himself in, and other teams going to be looking now to provoke him.
I wish Tom could avoid these situations, but it's easy for me to say that. They happen so quickly, they develop so fast, but I think people, the opponent that is, they sit there and go, get under his skin, irritate him. He'll be provoked, he'll blow a gasket, and he'll put himself in hot water again. Do it to him. Do it to him. And I wish he would avoid those situations.
Absolutely a thing, by the way. It's part of the scouting report. Agitate. Get in his face. Try to goad him into things. That's a normal and absolutely part of the procedure now. And he's got a target on his back. Whether he likes it or not, we can deny the reality all we want to. Everybody's waiting for the next thing to happen with Tom Wilson. The league can't wait to suspend him. So he's got to be extra careful.
All right, number two in our 5 at 5, let's go to the diamond. Nats getting healthier today. Will Harris off the injured list, available to pitch tonight if they can get the game in with rain falling here in Southeast D.C. right now. And more importantly, Juan Soto off the injured list. Juan Soto is not going to start in the outfield tonight and maybe not in the next few days, but he's got a chance to hit because swinging the bat does not hurt his shoulder.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big deal to get that guy back, and Will Harris as well. I mean, they haven't been able to see him at all. He's been out since March, and he's at full health. That's a great sign. He says he's ready to go, and he said he worked out every single day during this time off, so hopefully he can hit the ground running. But you can't say enough about what this lineup means when you have Juan Soto in it, and as you said, he is not going to start tonight. He's still in what is called a throwing program to get that arm strength back and get that arm shoulder feeling well. But he says he has no issues swinging the bat, so I'd expect him to be in a pinch-hitting role.
Byron Kerr from the Blitz, right here on Grant and Danny. Baby steps, I suppose. I'm still concerned that he doesn't appear to be really ready to throw. I think this basically is a sign, though. They think he will be after the weekend, right? You're going to have him around, use him for at-bat. In these games against the Braves, if and when they play, DH this weekend in New York, American League Ballpark. He could presumably hit in all those games. Then next week, you're hoping he's full bore. If he's not, then it's kind of questionable as to why you activated him before now.
Not tell you that Juan Soto is the best player in baseball, but his numbers over the last couple of years stack up favorably with everybody else as far as him being maybe the best hitter in baseball. What he's done in terms of walks and strikeouts, walking 13 times more than he struck out last year. 41 walks, 28 Ks. It just doesn't happen. Players are not capable of that. In his career, he's got almost as many walks as strikeouts. This year, had more walks than strikeouts. He's doing it while hitting, for his career, almost 300 with immense power. Already 71 home runs. Getting that bat back in the late innings and eventually into the lineup is going to be a big, big deal.
In about half the games, he has as many walks, pretty much, as Trey Turner, Starling Castro, and Kyle
Schwarber
combined.
Fans are going to heckle.
This season.
Pretty incredible.
Yeah, fans will be heckling Juan Soto. There's no doubt about that. Fans might also be heckling the Houston Astros. I can't wait for this.
The Astros face
the Yankees for the first time since Jose Altuve walked off the Yankees in the 2019 League Championship Series to advance to the World Series. I'm going to tell you right now, this is something I've been looking forward to since the Astros had that press conference where they left Dusty out there to answer a bunch of questions when they had just hired him and he did nothing wrong.
Yeah, Dusty wants everyone to get over it.
And Dusty still wants everyone to get over it. Oh, yeah. He says people have been mean to the Astros and they've done their time and leave them alone. They're just young boys. Well, here's the deal. They cheated all the way to a World Series win. They cheated probably all the way to another World Series loss, take that L, Washington Nationals in seven games. And one of the teams that they were better than in those runs was the Yankees, and Yankees fans didn't forget.
Fans are going to heckle, and you know, there's obviously there's no place for, you know, throwing things on the field or, you know, anytime you're putting anyone in danger. There's just no place for that, and hopefully, you know, that – not only doesn't happen, but certainly will not be tolerated. And so, you know, fans are, you know, they have the right to come and, you know, cheer and say what they want. But, you know, anytime there's stuff going on the field, that's very much crossing a line.
Aaron Boone, the manager of the Yankees. Translation, please don't throw anything. Please don't make any of the Astros fear for their lives. Give them hell.
But go ape. Go crazy. This is great theater. Now, the Yankees are terrible right now. I think they're going to be good. At some point, they'll turn it on, but they can't get out of their own way. I don't care about that. This will be the first time in my life I'm sitting there pumping my fist for a New York team. Really, the New York Yankees, most specifically. I can't stand them for a billion and one reasons. Let's go Yankees. And Yankee fans, please, the world is counting on you. Please.
You know what? That's actually a great point. And by the way, I mean, you act like the Astros are world beaters. I mean, I think they're one game better than the Yankees right now.
Nobody's good.
Houston's 15-13. The Yankees are 14-14. But you just said something that was brilliant. I don't know that I've ever been a Yankees fan until tonight.
I despise them. I think they're everything wrong in sports. Tonight, that's a different story. I put that aside. The enemy of my enemy.
And not only that, Yankees fans have always, in my opinion, mostly been insufferable. Largely because, as a huge Orioles fan growing up as a kid because the Nats didn't exist. Still obviously want the O's to do well and root for them in the American League. I would go to Camden Yards in my black and my orange, sit there watching my birds, all my favorite guys in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I just got all kinds of Yankees fans around me with body odor screaming about, you know, he's a bum, this guy. 372-pound dude smelling. I still smell the guy right now. I remember exactly what he looked like. This guy's a bum. Get him out of here. So much of that at Camden Yards.
77% numbers approximate of folks in my class at the George Washington University were from New York or New Jersey. I just made those numbers up. Enough. I had enough of New York stuff my entire life. I'm good on that.
Number 4, 5 at 5, Benjamin Solak, the Draft Network, was on the show today. We asked him about left tackle Sam Cosmi, drafted out of Texas. Could he be ready to start at left tackle, protecting Ryan Fitzpatrick's blind side in week one this year?
He could be. And the thing is, we usually look at athletic players and we say, all right, this guy's more of a project. He's a developmental player. You've got to remember Sam Cosmi started for about 2.5, I think 3 seasons there at Texas. And so he's quite well on his way in terms of experience and savvy. And while athleticism describes the ceiling, it also describes the floor. If you're a really good athlete and you have technical issues, well, you can get away with those. You have a larger margin for error because your recovery quickness, because of your length. Right. And so Cosme, who, you know, he's a little bit upright. He's got to learn how to play with better knee bend. He's got to learn how to handle bull rushes. All that work is there. He's such a good athlete that he can get away with some of those mistakes because he's got such quick feet and such natural balance that even when he does lose to a bull rush, he can re-anchor better than some other guys who, if they lose to a bull rush, it's ball game. So I do think he can start at left tackle.
I like that Sam Cosme pick a lot. I think it's my favorite pick of the draft. I wanted something better than, well, we can get by with what we have again. I don't want to do that. I don't want to get by at a pivotal position. I'd rather get by at running back or, like your third strong safety or a linebacker or a second tight end. I don't want to get by at left tackle. I feel like that's more premium maybe than some folks do. So I like that pick a lot. I like hearing good things about their new rookie.
Cornelius Lucas played well enough last year that I think I would bring Cosme along as best I could to start.
Uh-huh.
But let's not be in a rush. No, you don't need to be ready in week one. I'd like you to be ready in week one. But if you're not, fine. And I guess what I mean by that is don't force him on the field. Don't feel like he's got to start to justify the pick or if he's still a little bit raw or maybe mechanically doing some things you don't love, if he's got to work on some technique stuff. Let him work on it in practice, and if he doesn't start until week 3 or 7 or 9, I'm okay with that.
Because the flip side of what I'm saying is what you're saying, I think, in so much as you can get away with it for a handful of weeks. You can get away with Cornelius Lucas, a swing tackle, a bit of a journeyman for 2, 4, 5, 6, heck, half a season. You don't want to start majoring that, though, for 2, 3, 4 years at a time.
No, and they don't plan on doing it, and give the organization credit. You know, we beat them up on a lot of things, okay? And I think rightfully so.
Uh-huh.
I believe what I care about is being fair, honestly. That's what I hope when people think about our show, you or me, certainly I'll speak for myself. Me on air, I hope people say, oh, he's fair. They've done a great job at left tackle for a long time. They've properly evaluated that it's an important position. They did it with Chris Samuels. They did it with Trent Williams. And they're not going to just go with some 9-to-5 jobber, ham and egger, for 6 or 7 seasons. It's not in the cards. They went right back to the well, top 50. 5 picks and drafted one, and hopefully Cosme's the guy. All right, finally, 5 at 5, presented by Wave Soda. Grant and Danny, let's go to the hardwood. Russell Westbrook, I love watching you, man. You care so much, and it's so obvious. Says that he just wants to make his teammates better. 24 assists last night means you did, my man, you did.
I am very grateful and thankful and to be able to go out and compete and have my imprint on the game. And each night I try to figure out ways to be able to impact winning and impact my team. And tonight was one of those nights where certain things are rolling, guys are rolling, and my job is to be able to find them. And as a point guard and as playing this position, you got to be able to make somebody around you better. And I feel like I take a lot of pride and effort and energy and time and watching film and to be able to make others around me better.
Danny, you follow the ins and outs, the day-in, day-out NBA closer than I do. Was Russell Westbrook always this, humble and, as a dude, I love him. I remember being so annoyed by him in the past. People were just calling him Brody. That bothered me for some reason. Has he always been this guy? Because I haven't had any of that this year, really.
Yeah. So remember, times he would wear glasses that didn't have any lenses or some sort of weird flamboyant outfit to the facility. And, then there are questions about that. And he's been gruff and frustrated and competitive before. But I don't think he's been exactly like this all the time, I would say. But he's such a polarizing player that there's this outsized debate around him that he's not responsible for. He's just going out and playing hard, and some people can't stand it because he turns the ball over 6 times. Other people are going, he just had 24 assists in a game. He's going to average a triple-double. If he doesn't score, rebound, or assist in any of the games that he plays for the rest of the season, he'll still average a triple-double. Please appreciate this. And there's a tug of war over that. That kind of hysteria and debate, which I think is honestly good for the sport, just as a quick aside, I think that's led to maybe some reputation things that he probably doesn't deserve. Is that a fair answer?
Absolutely. No, I've enjoyed so much watching him off the floor, too, as a dude, doing interviews and things. And I should say about Durant, I mean, I do like Kevin Durant. I just, he bristles it with the media a lot and comes off as if he's kind of annoyed sometimes with the media, or, you know, doesn't enjoy that interaction at all. And that might well be because he's had bad experiences or whatever. I'm not necessarily saying that, I mean, he's a professional and he does what he's got to do. But he has a very hostile relationship at times with the media. And for some reason, I would have thrown Russell Westbrook in that category. And I think I was off base on that, I guess, is my point. Yeah. I haven't felt that this year.
Yeah, the reputation, I don't think, was fairly deserved, I would say.
Grant and Danny on the Fan, that is your 5 at 5 on G&D. Appreciate you guys checking it out, as always. Ron Rivera yesterday was on national CBS Sports Radio. He was asked about Ryan Fitzpatrick, and he hinted at the idea that Fitz might be here more than just one season. Play that audio for you. We'll get your reactions to that next. Is this the Imperial March? Did I get that right?
No.
It's not?
No. What is this, Darius?
I don't know. It's another Star Wars song, probably. He's been doing it all day.
He's going for, like, the obscure Star Wars songs.
Yeah, I thought that's the bit we agreed to.
No, I'm totally fine with that. We talked about an escalation, maybe starting with, like, little Duel of the Fates,
so
little Sunrise.
Yeah,
we totally had a thing.
Yeah.
And we were going to lead you on, and you're like, what is this today? Why are you guys playing this? Then it would culminate with, like, a big, massive, you know, either intro theme or the Imperial March, or kind of let everyone know.
And are we ever going to do the...
I got you. I got you.
Wait, is that... was that the...
It's kind of... I mean, you didn't get it exactly right, but I know what you meant.
I'm trying... Now I have to remember the Star Wars thing.
Like when they get their medals and Chewie doesn't get one for some reason?
For some reason, I kept having the Jurassic Park one.
It's, by the way, they're all... Because it's all John Williams. One of the hardest things to do in the world is to think about...
Can you pull the Jurassic Park song for me real quick?
Is to think about the different John Williams's incredible themes that he's come up with and bring them out right in a row.
So I didn't. That's a crazy pull by your boy.
It's really, yeah, it's really
so
hard.
So the same guy did Star Wars.
Yes. Indiana Jones.
He did.
Superman.
Because I thought that was there too.
And,
so this
and
guy
Jurassic Park.
I mean, he is so rich.
It's John Williams and Hans Zimmer are basically.
Yeah, I know Hans Zimmer.
They're basically the two
BDK
best.
BDK talks about him a lot.
He does talk about him.
Like Kevin McCarthy.
Give me John Williams in a walk, please. That's my guy.
Well, BDK might argue that.
We're going to argue it.
I think one out of every 7 Instagram posts from BDK is about Hans Zimmer.
Hans Zimmer's score. How did he do it? It's a lot of symbols. Listen, John Williams. John Williams guy.
What do you think? Let me look this up. That's such a hard name to look up. You know how many John Williams is there are? He shows up as the first one, by the way.
Yeah, of course he is.
Okay.
He's the guy.
What do you think is his net worth? I'm going to say 50 mil.
John Williams net worth. I'm going to go a little lower. I'm going to say.
No, look at all the songs.
I'm
going to
say 38 milli.
Terrible guess. Pulling it up now. John Williams net worth is an impressive 100 million.
100 milli for John Williams. Every penny should have 10 times that.
This is Jurassic Park. Oh, this is so silly.
It's such a good score.
When the new Jurassic Park movie, it's not that new now, but when the new Jurassic Park movie came out, like 5-6 years ago, it had the redheaded actress whose dad's a director who played in Happy Days, Bryce Dallas Howard, Ron Howard's daughter. Am I making any of that up?
No, that's correct.
All those facts are right?
Bryce Dallas Howard is correct.
It's a decent little dive.
She directed a couple episodes of The Mandalorian as well.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Bryce Dallas Howard's in it and Chris Pratt is in it. And it came out like 6 years ago. I said all that, which I didn't need to say to say. Mm. When this played for the first time during that movie, I was 5 again.
When I
freaking cried.
When the whole orchestra pops, because right now this is just the quiet phase. This is the building phase. Orchestra pops
Give
when they
Indiana
get over the
Jones.
Island, right? When it gets big and you're seeing the full panoramic and the scope, it's great. Majesty of filmmaking, dude.
Majesty of filmmaking?
The majesty of filmmaking.
Did you just, I mean, are you doing a podcast with BDK after this?
I had him on my podcast a couple weeks ago, but yeah.
You just said
that's
the
when it's beautiful.
Majesty of filmmaking.
That's what it is. It's beautiful when that happens. It takes you places.
You got Indiana Jones queued up?
I'll go all day.
I think music is the secret to the majesty of filmmaking.
The secret sauce?
If you really want to get into it. Because if you have a great scene well acted, like, my favorite moments in any one movie when I rewatch that scene, you're like, oh, I don't remember that music being played. You know what I mean? It just adds to the moment. It's like a great speech. If you have a great speech and there's nothing under it, it's fine. You have a great speech and there's an awesome
like crescendo or build. Yeah.
Game changer.
Yeah, Al Pacino's one-inch speech is not that special without a little bit of soundtrack underneath it.
Is there some soundtrack
underneath? I'm sure there is, right?
See, now we're going to contradict ourselves. I think the beauty of that is I think it was like there's silent nothing in the locker room. And he's like walking around. You could hear a pin drop.
Because I know in Hoosiers it's quiet. There's nothing else there besides Gene Hackman saying, we're going to be winners. And they start slow clapping.
On this team, we fight for that inch.
Fight for that inch.
We claw with our fingernails for that inch. And if you add up all those inches, God, that's a good speech.
Difference between living and dying?
Between winning and losing.
Winning and losing. And then the last one, get a little Superman going. The Superman one might be the best. It might be the best in addition to Star Wars. Actually, Star Wars is the best. But Superman is perfect.
I'll tell you this. In any fight, it's the guy who's willing to die who is going to win that inch. And I know, if I'm going to have any life anymore.
Listen to this. Come on.
It is because I am still living to fight. Living to die for that inch. Because that's what's living it. The 6 inches in front of your face. See how much better that got when he gave me music?
When he's giving you the Superman theme while you're giving the 1 inch speech. That fits.
But the beauty of that speech was his, like, he's up and he's down.
He's
like
up and he's
pitchability.
Down, yeah.
Fastball 96, right. Changeup 83.
That's Pacino, man.
Because he goes real quiet and he goes, the 6 inches in front of your face. And then he goes, now, I can't make you do it. You got to look at the guy next to you, look into his eyes. Now, I think you're going to see a guy who's willing to go get that inch with you. You're going to see a guy who's willing to sacrifice himself for this team. But it's here. It's there.
It's up and down.
It's up. It's down.
So he's basically
That's a team, gentlemen.
When Vince Vaughn realized that his path to superstardom was just to be double down Trent from Swingers, you know, Trent talks really fast. Baby, let's do the double down 11. Like that guy that like is funny and just it goes a mile a minute. When he stopped doing other stuff and just started doing that, then he became a billionaire. Pacino, around Scent of a Woman, realized that that's what I do. I throw fastballs and changeups. I change speeds with my cadence and my delivery. And that's what he turned into.
Hans Zimmer's net worth.
146.
200 mil.
Damn it.
Still going with John Williams?
Yeah, John Williams, 1 seed. Hans Zimmer, 2 seed. I mean, you're talking Duke, Kentucky here.
2 seed doubled up your boy in net worth.
Talking Duke, Kentucky here.
Okay, well, who's two? Because Kentucky just beat Duke, I think. 200? BDK right now, screaming about
Hans
Zimmer somewhere.
I'll text him right now.
Please do. Grant and Danny on the fan. Next, what Ron Rivera said about Ryan Fitzpatrick possibly having 2 years in D.C. I wanted to give you a couple seconds to soak it in.
No, I'm just basking. I'm just Carol basking for a second. Now you've got to crawl up your screen. It's letting you know, hey, here's the exposition. We're not going to waste time showing you stupid things. We're just giving you the scene. We're setting the pace right here, just like the serial movies in the 1950s that George Lucas grew up with. Now you know the context. Now you know the scene. Let's pan down and cut to the action.
I'm happy that you're happy.
Thank you, buddy.
Grant and Danny, stretch run. On the fan, we will get into what Ron Rivera said about Ryan Fitzpatrick on national radio, maybe being around longer than just 1 year. And before we get out of here, we're going to give you what we learned today. But right now, let's go to the BetQL guest hotline. Welcome onto the show, our buddy Mark Zuckerman of Masson Sports. Mark, thanks for the time as always, pal. How you been?
I'm doing fine, Grant. You're living the good life, though, because you get to call the two games when the weather is fine. And now it's pouring tonight, and you don't have to be out here waiting through this like the rest of us are. You knew what you were doing. I'm impressed. I did not
1 o'clock day pieces from my pal Grant. Yeah.
When they called me late night, they said we got 2 day games. It's going to be about room temperature. How do you feel? I said, well, for room temperature, I'll make it out. But certainly, my first concern about the opportunity. But what's the weather going to be like? No, I had a blast. It was a lot of fun to be part of the team for a couple of days. But speaking of kind of Team Masson and you guys being out there and covering things, Mark, I want to start with the news you've been working on for the crew at Masson, and that is that Juan Soto's back, but he's not in the lineup, so he's not really back, and Will Harris is back. Catch us up to speed.
Yeah, so the Soto, I'm not necessarily surprised that he was activated. I felt like there was a chance it was going to happen, although I'm a little surprised that they did it before he can play the field. He has not really thrown to bases yet. That's the main thing they need to try from him. That's where his shoulder's bothering him. He's been fine swinging all along, so they weren't really concerned about that. So I thought they would maybe try to put him through a workout yesterday or maybe wait one more day to see if they could activate him. But instead they decided, you know what, if he can hit, that's not a bad bat to have off your bench along with Ryan Zimmerman. Let's do that. And keep in mind they're playing the Yankees this weekend in the Bronx, so they're going to need a DH. And I think that's their feeling is if by then he just isn't quite ready to play the field, let's have him on the roster, maybe get him a couple pinch hit at bats the next couple nights. And then he's good to go this weekend, you know, and then maybe by next week he's in the field. So I'm a little surprised, but not terribly surprised that they'll take whatever bats they can get right now, especially against the Braves.
Yeah.
In Will Harris's case. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, sorry. I was going to follow up, but please, Will Harris, give me an update.
So the quick story in Harris is, and this has been a bizarre spring for him. He was shut down in spring training. They diagnosed him with a blood clot. At one point, he thought he had thoracic outlet syndrome, which is a really bad injury for a veteran pitcher to have. They found out, no, it's not that. They still don't really know why his hand was swollen at times and numb at times, but they've all decided that he's okay and he can pitch, and if he can bear it, that it's not a danger to him. And so he's ready to go. I mean, it's a little bit surprising. They didn't, you know, send him in a rehab assignment or anything, but the feeling was that, you know, he pitched in Fredericksburg and simulated games and he's good to go. And the good news is the bullpen has been so good and so deep that they're not going to have to necessarily throw him in there in a huge spot late in the game. They could probably ease his way back in.
Yeah, Mark, apologies, I didn't mean to cut you off there before, but this is basically a little bit disconcerting on both fronts. The, well, we're not sure what's wrong, let's throw him out there, in Will Harris's case, and we still aren't sure if Juan Soto can throw. Anything sort of long-term in either case that kind of raises some eyebrows?
That definitely concerns me, Danny, the you know, the throwing issue for, yeah, Soto. I mean, in the long run, he's no good to this team if he can't play the field. They don't have a permanent DH in the National League yet. So, you know, they're all saying at this point that it's just a matter of them wanting to take some time, that, you know, eventually that he'll be able to do it. And they would rather have his bat in the lineup. They didn't feel like there's a whole lot of value in keeping him sidelined. But let's see, he's got to pass that test. And if he doesn't pass it here in the next few days, then you're kind of wondering, okay, what's the holdup? And is this something he's going to be dealing with all season long? That's a, you know, a problem. Now, by the same token, if you're a right fielder, how many throws a game do you have to make? Maybe only a couple. And there are things you can do to tell a guy, hey, listen, even if it is, you know, unless it's a critical game on the line situation, just hit the cutoff man and let them take care of it. So I suppose there are ways to manage your way through it. But in the long run, no, that's not a very good thing, for especially for a young player. You don't want him dealing with that and having it become a long-term issue.
Mark Zuckerman of Masson Sports with us here on Grant and Danny. Mark, the area of the ball club I'm most impressed by and most surprised by is the defense, where they've turned 15 double plays in their last 10 games, and right now they've got 21 defensive runs saved, which is the best in the major leagues. Trey Turner, in fact, has the highest number of runs saved of any position player. Were you counting on them being this good defensively? Is it sustainable? What's your take on that?
No, I was not counting on that. I mean, I thought they'd be better, obviously, because it would be hard to be worse than they were last year. You know, the feeling was that Victor Robles, the hope was he would get back to closer to his 2019 form. So far, that's been the case. I think the biggest one has been Trey Turner, who by his own admission was not good defensively last year and has been fantastic this year. A good first step. He's getting the balls he didn't get to before. He's got, I think we don't give him enough credit for having as good of an arm as he does. He threw a couple balls over the weekend from deep in the hole that had some zip on it. You know, he may not ever be the most elite defensive shortstop in baseball, but I think he can be more than above average, and certainly so far the stats say that he is this year. When you combine that with what he's done at the plate and on the bases, you know, it's early, but we're talking MVP caliber stuff from him. So I think the difference here is that they've been really good up the middle. You always talk about having good defense up the middle. Center field's been good. Shortstop's been great. Second base hasn't been fantastic yet, but it hasn't really cost them. And their catchers have been better than they've seen in the past. So you start from that as a foundation, and I think it makes a big difference. I don't know if they're going to be the best defensive team in the league at the end of the season, But what we've seen so far is a huge improvement, and that will make a difference in the long run.
Mark Zuckerman with us here. All Grant and Danny breaking down the Nats. Mark, you mentioned center field. Robles back to his old ways defensively. Offensively, looks like a guy that is, you know, kind of struggling and lost at the plate. Although he wrapped out a couple hits this weekend, average all the way up to a sterling 229 at this stage, but he's not hitting for much power, not much extra base hits in that bat to this point. What do we make of him? Kind of give me a state of the union on Robles. Defensively, where you'd want him, I think you would have a better eye for it than I would, seeing every pitch of every game. But just give me kind of your general thoughts here. Take the temp.
Yeah, the defense has been a huge upgrade, and that's, I think, honestly, if you're the Nationals, that was what they were most concerned about, because if you can't play a good center field, then he's not really going to be useful with this team. And I think they view offense as almost a bonus from him. Now, that's not to say they don't think he can still be a very good offensive player. You know, it's not that long ago he was regarded the best prospect in the organization ahead of Juan Soto. So they still want him to be able to hit. They like his patience. He's taken his walks. He's gotten on base at a decent clip. He's just not hitting, especially for power, like you would think. You know, he started the year at the leadoff spot. I thought he did fine there, and then they bumped him down pretty quickly, and he hasn't been back except for one game the other day. I was a little surprised by that. I thought he might have a little longer leash out of the leadoff spot, but I think until he proves that he's not going to run himself into outs on the bases, they're not going to put him up there at the top of the order, because that will hurt them in the long run. He's already run into four outs this year, and some of them have been pretty ugly. So I think he needs to just refine that stuff. The hitting will come. Whatever they get from him offensively, they'll deal with. But if he's drawing his walks and not running himself into outs on the bases, then they'll take that from him, especially if he's just a number eight hitter.
Mark, I want to get you in line here, and we'll get you out so you can go over to the make-to-order stand there in the media room and get yourself some chicken strips and fries or something. But
no, they don't have that anymore, Grant. It's all boxed.
That's true. I had those this weekend. That was tough. But I will let you out on this. I want to know, quick primer for this Braves series, and then does tonight look okay? Am I getting home, settling in at 7:05, turning on the TV, and seeing the boys breaking down baseball? What are we looking at?
In my expert meteorological prediction, I'm going to say maybe not 7:05, but they will start the game hopefully not too late and play it through. I think whenever this clears through, they should be fine. But 7:05 may be asking a little too much at this point. Against the Braves, they're catching them at maybe a good time. They've lost four in a row. They have the worst pitching staff in the league, which is bizarre to me. That's not what I expected. I don't think anybody expected. Maybe they're due to break out again. But if you're the Nationals, I think you feel like you're catching them at a decent time. And this is we're going to be talking about this every time they play the Mets, the Braves, and the Phillies, at least for the first half of the season, maybe beyond. Division games are going to carry a whole lot of weight this year. It doesn't look like anyone's going to run away with it. The head-to-head matchups, I think, are the key. Whoever at the end of the year has won the most games in division, I think, is probably going to win the division. So every chance they get, especially if the Braves are not at 100% right now, try to take advantage of it. Try to take two out of three and put yourself in a good position for the long run.
Mark, really appreciate the time, buddy. Great work, man. See you soon.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Mark Zuckerman, Masson Sports, does an awesome job covering the Nationals and has for many years, joining us here on Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. A couple things on the Nats before we move along. On Soto being activated from the injured list but not being in the lineup,
mm-hmm.
I'm conflicted. I want to be happy and just say this is great. We might see him tonight in the eighth inning in a big spot. Him not being able to play the field today is a problem. Something is going on with that shoulder. Now, maybe, the Nats would say, he'll be fine in a couple of days. We're just getting a head start, and we have some interleague play coming up where we're playing an American League team and he can DH. I'm just worried. Nothing about what has happened since he went to the shelf has made me feel good about Juan Soto being minimally injured and back really soon. I just don't feel, it doesn't have a good feel in my gut.
Same here. And the thing that I'm most afraid of, again, is we go through this exercise of bringing him back, where he's a pinch hitting Peter for a couple days. Now he's a DH in the American League ballpark. And then let's say, for the sake of argument, next week, well, it turns out he's still not ready to throw. Is he back on the injured list again? Are we doing that again until he can kind of get ready? Do we now do another 10 days?
Because we've used Obi him as a comeback after missing time, have one shift, not play again last night.
Now, this could be much ado about nothing because he's 2 days away from being ready, for the sake of argument. And yeah, might as well have his bat in the lineup again instead of Hernan Perez. No problem. Great. Terrific. That's awesome. Could be just an afterthought. But again, when he was eligible to come off a couple days ago from the 10-day injured list, and there was sort of no indication that we were close to that because he couldn't throw to bases or couldn't do this or couldn't do that, that's concerning to me. You're not doing that because everything's fine. You're doing that because there's some sort of structural deal going on that is preventing, that's injured, that's hurt. That doesn't sound like a quick fix where we don't throw to second base for a couple days. That's a big deal. And I'm glad it's not affecting his swing. That's nice. You've got this sort of one half of the player. American League ballpark, you've got him for the DH purposes, but it's concerning.
Defense aside, which I mentioned was my biggest storyline and the thing I feel best about so far this season, the bullpen's been marvelous. And over the last six games now, they've got a 1.35 ERA. 20 innings of work, just three earnings given up. They've got an opponent batting average over those six games of 141. Opponents have struck out 18 times in those 20 innings. They have not allowed an inherited runner to win, as they've been winning these games last four, but over the last six. Not one inherited runner has scored. And you look on the season right now where the Nationals bullpen ranks, second in ERA, second in opponent batting average, fourth in opponent on-base percentage, fifth in opponent OPS, and they've done this all without Will Harris. Wander Suero banged up. He has not been available.
Less than full-strength Tanner Rainey.
Rainey coming back very slowly. Hand has not pitched that much, frankly. I mean, there was a week where Daniel Hudson didn't throw recently. So the horses have not been used that much. It's been a lot of, you know, your Sam Clays and your Kyle Finnegan's. Davies not going to the whip as often as you might early in the season. They're 500, and their bullpen is in great shape. And 100%. Now their starters are getting deeper. They had Lester pitch scoreless ball, then Corbin went seven, two runs. Max went the distance last time, so the bullpen has had two full days without throwing a single pitch. I just love the shape their bullpen is in as they get Harris back tonight.
Agreed. And so you can work in Harris more judiciously, right, as opposed to just trotting him out there in the eighth inning, which is what he was signed to do before last season, right? You could say, hey, you've got a low-leverage fifth, or you've got to, you know, get out of a jam here in the sixth or seventh inning, et cetera. You've got options, which is really, really good. It's a great point about Hand. Anecdotally, I feel like he hasn't pitched very much. He's only thrown nine innings over the course of the season, just added up all in total. And it feels like he's been pretty pitch efficient when he's done that.
How many appearances? Is it nine?
Eight appearances.
Yeah, I mean,
eight games, nine innings.
Extrapolate that out, you're nowhere near like a 70-game pace.
Yeah.
Which you wouldn't want that, but my point is when a guy's on pace for 70, that's where I start to worry.
Well, you've seen that when, and I'm not ripping Davey here, when there wasn't much effective in the bullpen, say in 2019 when they got off that terrible start and Sean Doolittle was up, whatever it was, 16 out of 18 days, and he pitched in like 12 or 13 or 14 of those games. That's a problem. That is a problem. That's not happening now.
53 appearance pace, which is basically nothing for your closer. Now he'll pitch more than that. Some of it is save situation. They haven't needed him as much, but I think they got a lot going for themselves in the pen. So that is a positive. We heard this last night on CBS Sports Radio, and we wanted to get some thoughts on it. We've been discussing this a couple different ways and times throughout the show, but here was Ron Rivera last night, Zach Gelb of CBS Sports asking him about Ryan Fitzpatrick and the QB situation.
And just with his age, it's tough to assume that he's a long-term answer. Were you guys close to drafting a quarterback or maybe moving up in this draft?
Well, we looked at it. We looked at the options and stuff like that. And quite honestly, you know, we felt the other option for us was to build the rest of the pieces and put those in place. And hey, what's to say if Ryan doesn't play well and he's got a lot left, and why don't you bring him back? I mean, we don't know what's going to happen. We got to go out and compete and see what happens this year.
What is the percentage chance that Ryan Fitzpatrick is Washington's starting quarterback week one of 2022?
51% to me.
You think there's a better chance than not?
I think everyone's underestimating this. I think they're in the same predicament, and they're going to kind of look around and go, well, this one okay. We can't really do much better. Why not just get this guy? He's already in the building. We don't have to pay him all that much. He'll want a raise after he plays fine for a handful of games. But I think it's more likely than not that he ends up as the guy. This idea that some magical veteran is going to shake free or they'll be in the right position to draft somebody, I don't think they're willing to push the chips in. I think they'll end up with Ryan Fitzpatrick again.
All right, at the risk of just interviewing you here, I'll give my take in a second.
Sure.
But let me follow up on that.
Yeah.
Is your 51%, you explained it, but how much of it is he played really well? Why not? You get the difference there?
I get exactly what you mean.
So, like, I'm about to give a percentage, but the vast majority of my reasoning is maybe he played okay, and they said, well, we could trade for Derek Carr, but why not just get one more year of this guy, draft someone?
It's the question. It's the essential question. He's fooled everybody, I think, every stop he's been, where early on he's had success, right? Early on he's done some really good things. He's thrown for huge totals. And you look up at the end of the year and, hey, the numbers end up being pretty okay, right? That's been his whole career. Like, the regression always happens with him. I think in a medium or smallish sample, he'll thrive. He'll do some good things. He'll do some Ryan Fitzpatrick things. There'll be a million memes about him diving for a first down. His chin strap will be on weird, and he'll come up smiling, and everyone's going to go nuts. And Chase Young will point at the name on the back of his jersey, and everyone will be so happy, and it'll be great, and everyone will be in love with Fitzmagic. Well, then they won't care
as
bad.
And everyone will say Fitzmagic.
Fitzmagic-y or something. And then we won't care about the interceptions or missing guys open or fumbling or whatever else happens, which always happens in his career. But they'll look up and they'll go, well, then the numbers are fine. We can't do much better. I guess we'll just do this.
I'm going to say the chance that Fitzpatrick is their starting quarterback week one 2022 is 15%. And that feels, I'm even going to check. I'm going to say 10%.
You are low on that.
Oh, yeah. I don't think it's a thing. I think this is a one-year stopgap bridge.
How do we get there? Walk me through that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Here's how.
Yep.
Their priority is next offseason. I have to find a quarterback. That's their logic.
It's as simple as that.
That Marty, and Ron decided this offseason they couldn't, and they said, we'll do it next year. And now you got to move heaven and earth, which is kind of what I wanted to do this time around. They really put their chips into the Stafford basket and tried.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, there isn't a team like L.A. willing to do what they did.
Right.
Trading a crazy contract, throwing a first, throwing another first. More often than not, the package they offered for Stafford gets you a quarterback of that caliber. So I think next offseason, they basically go back to that well, and they bring in, I've thrown the name Derek Carr out there a couple times, a guy like that.
Sure, that tier.
And if you can't, and now it's the draft, you don't have a choice. You're sitting there, and next year's Justin Fields is sliding. Now you trade up and get that guy. And maybe you don't love him. Maybe you like him fine. But a couple days later, everyone's going to tell you got your quarterback of the future. Everyone's raving about the Bears draft right now. We'll see if it worked or not.
Right.
But for the moment, it looks like maybe they got their guy. All right, it is time to figure out what we've learned on Grant and Danny. Never put Twinkies on your pizza. What did we learn? Driven by your local Honda dealer, race in for a great deal on the Honda of your dreams during the Honda Dream Garage Spring Event. Take advantage of the savings. See your local Honda dealer today.
Picture this is what I learned. More I was reminded, but I'm cheating a little bit. But I learned that it was about 24 years ago within a week of today. Imagine this scenario. You play for the Washington Bullets. You're pretty good. 44-win team. You got Chris Webber on your team. You got Juwan Howard. You got Calvert Chaney. You got Tracy Murray. You got Rod Strickland.
That's my squad. What year is this?
This is 1997. You're in the postseason.
This is 8-year-old GP. This is good.
It just so happens you're going up against a buzzsaw of an opponent. Remember, they played in that playoffs where they got eliminated in three games.
The Bulls led by
Michael Jordan.
MJ.
You're down one game to none. Your team bus arrives and you go into the locker room.
That's real interesting.
Michael Jordan arrives in a suit into your locker room, smoking a cigar before the game. Before the game, smoking a cigar.
That did not happen.
This is a story that has been told. He says to no one in particular, who's going to check me tonight? All the Bullets are intimidated beyond all get out because that's Michael Jordan. And everybody kind of looks around. No one knows what to do. A couple guys point towards Calvert Chaney. Michael Jordan laughs and leaves the room. Michael Jordan scored 55 points in that game.
I don't believe that story.
This is a story.
Where is that from?
This is Chris Webber from the Dan Patrick Show.
Chris Webber told that story on the Dan Patrick Show today?
Yeah. And so it was not today, but it was 24 years ago this week, and I was reminded that it came up in my
But you've heard
one
this
of my,
story
yeah,
before?
I've heard different versions. One where he rolled up in his Ferrari, smoking the cigars. They were getting off the team bus and asked him there. The other was that he came into the locker room.
So you believe this?
I believe that Michael Jordan asked, who's checking me tonight with a lit cigar, and then laughed and scored 55.
If that's a true story, first of all, that's the most, like, incredibly badass thing I've ever heard, number one, all right? And sorry, LeBron, you're never going to be that guy, no matter what you do. But my other reaction would be, I have to assume what actually happened was, like, they're out on the floor in the layup line, and Jordan comes up to, like, midcourt and just says, "Who's checking me?" to Chris Webber. And Webber says, "That guy," and points at Calbert Chaney. And then Jordan laughs, and then he goes and scores 55. And it happened, like, over the center stripe of the court during the layup line. And now he's misremembering it. Him walking into a locker room pregame with a cigar, I don't know, man. I don't know if I can get behind
that. So there
that.
Are two versions. Again, one is that it was as, because it's in Chicago. They obviously won home court there because they won 72 games.
Weird. I would have thought it was in Washington.
No. Game two in Chicago very much. And as the I almost called them the Wizards, the Bullets at that time, they should be called the Bullets, their team bus arrives, Jordan's getting out of his Ferrari, smoking the cigar, the others that he came into the locker room. Either way, lit cigar, who's checking me? Calbert is, 55 points.
It's the craziest thing I've ever heard. I hope so badly that story's true. I think that'd be amazing.
24 years ago this week.
But you're buying it.
I buy that it happened. I buy that there was a lit cigar. I buy that everybody kind of awkwardly pointed towards Calbert Chaney, and I buy that Jordan scored 55.
All right, the thing that I learned today was that you can be on a flight and a woman could give birth on the airplane.
What?
That happened on a flight. In fact, she didn't know she was pregnant. So people are saying...
What?
That's a thing, apparently. It happens sometimes. A woman who did not know she was pregnant gave birth to a baby boy on a Delta Airlines flight that just so happened to be carrying her own personal medical team. Sometimes you hear about, these weird stories, and it's airplane stuff, and it's in different countries. This was in a flight going from Salt Lake City to Hawaii. This lady's name is Lavi, and I don't know why she had a medical team with her, but she did not know she was pregnant. And she just so happened to be on this flight, unexpectedly gave birth to her son, Raymond, at just 29 weeks, according to a news release from Hawaii Pacific Health. Our sister did not know she was pregnant, so she was just as shocked as the rest of us when our nephew was born, the new mom's sisters wrote on a GoFundMe page that has raised over $6,000. It's like a 3+ hour delay as they sorted all this out, I guess, upon landing. There are pictures, there are videos of people as she was helped, like, I guess, brought to the back of the plane and then gave birth to a child. And everyone's like on social media with their cameras like,
"My
someone's
God.
Giving birth right now on the plane."
Folks, will pause in-flight snack and beverage service.
This is your captain. Say congratulations to Livy. Baby's born. Mom and baby doing good. He's like, everybody's healthy. 7 pounds, 4 ounces. And everyone's like, "Yeah."
Apparently, everyone erupted into, like, large cheers for
her. I mean, oh, my God.
The baby. But that's what I learned today. I learned, number one, I already knew this because I've seen it, like, occasionally on the news. You can be pregnant and not know it and
that's
ready to have a baby.
Which is something, by the way.
Having had two kids with my wife, that just seems very difficult.
There was lots of awareness about pregnancy.
But okay. And the second part that I learned today, this is new. You could just be on a flight.
Wow.
And someone could just give birth next to you. Thanks for listening to Grant and Danny.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.